Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. British authorities have released the names of two of the three men accused of the London terrorist attack on Saturday. That attack killed at least seven people. 27-year-old Khurram Shahzad Butt was a Pakistani-born British citizen. 30-year-old Rashid Redouane had claimed to be Moroccan and Libyan, according to Scotland Yard. Now, they may have been known to authorities. Butt was a supporter of what British press is saying is a banned Islamist group in the UK. And last year, he was featured in a British documentary titled The Jihadis Next Door. Meanwhile, today, London's Mayor Sadiq Khan lashed out against the attackers.
The acts of these three men on Saturday night was cowardly, was evil. And I'm angry and furious that these three men are seeking to justify their actions by using the faith that I belong to justify their actions.
Well, at the same time, President Donald Trump continued his Twitter screed against Khan, tweeting today, quote, pathetic excuse by London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who had to think fast on his no reason to be alarmed statement. MSM is working hard to sell it. Well, that's the president mentioning in a tweet where he had taken Khan's words out of context. The mayor had actually told Londoners there's no reason to be alarmed about the increased police presence in the UK capital following the terrorist attacks. Well, much to wrap our heads around, so let's get some perspective here. Joining us now is Adil Najam. He's dean of the party, or founding dean of the party School of Global Affairs at Boston University. Professor Najam, welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm sorry, I'm trying to keep up with the pace of the news here, and sometimes it's a little harder than I think it should be. But let me just first of all get your reactions to all this happened in the UK. I mean, you're a key member of the Muslim community here. What do you make of it?
I think there's a lot of fear. I think there's a lot of concern, not just about what's happening in the UK, but really what's happening around the world. And all of these things are connected. In the UK, of course, this happens right on the eve of an election that they have decided will go on, an election that could possibly be impacted in some way, to some extent, by this. But I think the repercussions, as you mentioned, especially with the tweet war the president of the US wants to have with the mayor of London, is that we are living in a different world. We are living a different world, and that causes a lot of fear for a lot of people about what might happen. This morning, there was a shooting at Florida, mm-hmm. and I kid you not, I was pacing around the room to figure out what was happening. And it's not even in the news. You know, six people get killed. This is not terror. You can cause terror, but not be a terrorist. It's linked to how we have treated the news in Orlando, not in Orlando, but in Portland, mm-hmm. Oregon.
Right.
And when does someone become a terrorist? Does being a Muslim, is that a necessary condition for that? And if I might go on a limb here, not on a limb really, is the statements around Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, because he's not just the mayor of London, he's a Muslim mayor mm-hmm. of London. The mayor of Manchester a few weeks ago made just exactly the same statement, didn't seem to elicit the same reaction. So there is a lot of concern on what has happened.
Well, so let's talk about that more for just a moment here, because, I mean, in that tape that we played of Mayor Sadiq Khan, you heard him personally react. He was saying that he's infuriated at these attackers for using the very same faith that he practices to justify, you know, murdering people crossing London Bridge. And I don't see why people shouldn't pay special attention to the fact that sure. Khan is saying this, because he is speaking as a member of the Muslim community in the UK.
Oh, yes. I don't think there's a surprise in what he's saying.
Right.
I think the surprise is what the President of the United States is saying. But, you know, what Sadiq Khan was saying is something that I've heard now every time since 9/11. I have said that on this table many times, in these studios many times. That is how every Muslim feels. You don't even have to be Muslim. That's how every Londoner feels. But I think we are coming to a world where even those of us who are trying so hard not to be compartmentalized mm-hmm. in these silos are just finding the forces that would force that upon us
okay.
to be too strong.
Okay, so I want to come back to that in a second. Mm-hmm. But I just want to play a little bit of tape from Prime Minister Theresa May, because, again, it feels as if I don't know if I'm reading too much, but the language is getting sharper out of the UK than perhaps we've heard before, and maybe that's because this is the third attack in such a short period of time in the UK. But here's a little bit of what Prime Minister Theresa May has said.
Since the emergence of the threat from Islamist-inspired terrorism, our country has made significant progress in disrupting plots and protecting the public. But it is time to say enough is enough.
But enough has always been enough. Enough has been enough after each one of those attacks. I don't know how this one is any more enough than that. She's exactly right. More needs to be done. But where I think they're wrong is in the clip that you did play, that Muslims somehow have to do something about this. Yes, they do, but the same way that everyone else has to do. That's like saying that anyone who's white or who's Christian has to do something about the Jeremy Christian, the guy in Portland, mm-hmm. who went on this rampage. That is true, but that doesn't mean others don't have to. I think what the connection that is being made, then the connection that is disturbing, is that somehow this is the responsibility of every one of the 1.8 billion Muslims around the world. And I think what is left not even unstated, because it's now becoming more and more stated that there is something wrong with Muslims as a species. And I think that is not just wrong and is not just offensive. It is very, very dangerous. And that scares all of us Muslims who are as outraged or more, because we are scared for our kids. You know, I think the really important thing is what's happening to a teenager in high school. I have two kids of my own. I am more scared for them today than I was ever after 9/11.
Specifically why?
Because of what they hear
from
everyone around them, and because of what they might say, because these are teenagers. I think it is extremely tough to be Muslim and a teenager today. Actually, I think it's very tough to be an immigrant and a teenager. I think it's just always tough to be a teenager. But we are creating a narrative through the media, through these tweets, through our politics, that is going to impact these young people, not just for 4 years of one president or the other, not just for one election cycle or another. Those who are in high school today, they are going to be tainted for their entire life.
But what could the impact of that be? I mean, what could the impact of that be on, you know, your own kids?
I think some of the best, strongest, most important values that we have built our societies on are being threatened by this narrative. The value of diversity, the value of questioning, the value of truth, the value of being able to live with differences, the value of being able to celebrate those who might be against you. So think about, you know, these are kids who are hearing all of this, right? Even if they have NPR on, I sometimes now have to turn NPR off because my kids are at the back of the car.
Yeah.
Because these are impressionable minds. And it's not just my kids because they are Muslims. If they're not Muslims, any kids, we are creating a poisoned narrative.
But let me ask you a question. So I take your point about absolutely not tarring an entire faith, an entire global faith, because of the, you know, the disgusting actions of a diminishingly small minority. But you also made the point of, you know, we don't hold, for example, all of Christianity responsible when, I don't know, in years past, someone shot up an abortion clinic in the name of Jesus Christ, for example. But am I also hearing you saying that maybe we should? Because I think why not?
But we don't have to go to that past, right? So guy in Portland, right? I mean, he did what he did avowedly even after the event in the name of what he believes to be right Christian values. It would be wrong. It would be absurd for me to then say, now every Christian in the world has to respond to that. Now, none of this is to say that Muslims don't have a responsibility. Not a responsibility, but a special role. I worry about this because this radicalization could impact my own kids.
But so that's exactly right? The point, right? Like, I think people are saying, okay, not let's not malign the entire global Islamic community, but can we not ask what is the responsibility of
yes, but when
individual
you ask,
families in communities like, you know, in East London,
yes,
for example.
But the assumption in that question is that they are doing nothing. They're just sitting there clapping when these things happen. You know, we have a president who actually believes they dance, Muslims dance when these things happen. And that is not just absurd, it's nonsense. It is you get an attack anywhere, like the one in Florida today, and every Muslim is on edge because the repercussion could be personal for them. So this assumption, this insulting assumption that we have to ask this question because otherwise they are doing nothing.
Mm.
Right? So we get the answer 1,000 times. We don't want to believe it.
But there is a war of ideas going on in the minds of some people, though, is there not? I mean, Theresa May also recently said that, you know, that radical extremism would only be defeated when, in her words, we turn people's minds away from this violence and make them understand that our values, pluralistic British values, are superior to anything offered by the preachers and supporters of hate.
I think that is correct. But that statement should not just be for Muslims who get to go towards extremist violence, right? It is equally true for anyone who tilts towards violence and extremism, and violence as a means of finding the solution to what they want out of life, right? And that should be equally true. I think that war of ideas is our defining war, and it is not just a Muslim war.
Mm.
It is very much a Muslim war. If you talk to Muslim parents here in Boston or elsewhere, they are more worried than anyone else I know about this, because this radicalization is very immediate to them.
Mm-hmm.
The threat to them is to their own children. Right. So the absurdity, I think, is in the notion, in the assumption, that we have to ask this question because if we don't ask, they won't do anything. If we don't ask, they aren't doing anything. Or we are asking because we think they aren't doing anything. For 20 years now, we have been talking about what is being done. It's not working. That is true. It's not working within Muslims. It is not working within non-Muslims. It is not working within the U.S. It is not working within the French or the British or anywhere else. So, but what I think the problem with this rhetoric is it actually strengthens those who would divide, whether they be ISIS,
right,
or whether they be supremacists elsewhere.
So how then, or where then, is the counter-messaging, if I can call it that, going to come from when... for example, Theresa May was asked by half a dozen reporters in a recent press conference if she would like President Donald Trump to stop his attacks on Sadiq Khan, and she wouldn't criticize Trump at all. She avoided the question entirely. So that's a policy of avoidance, for example, on one hand, from the UK Prime Minister, and then of course we have our own president here right now who has taken the opportunity of the death of 7 more people in London to renew his call for travel ban and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just wondering, that is the dominant political messaging coming from multiple places right now. Where is the counter messaging going to come from?
If I knew, the world would be a better place if anyone knew. But we keep trying. I think it's going to come from you. And I think it's going to come from your listeners. And I think it's going to come out of many, many times. And it does come. The question, it's not that the voice isn't there. It's being drowned out by other voices. Right. So imagine, for example, again, in a blue sky world, all religious extremism from the so-called Muslim groups that are trying to co-opt Islam in the name of terror suddenly stops tomorrow. Would the problem go away? No, because now we have as many or more people who have built their own reservoirs of hate against all Muslims based on this,
uh-huh,
right? So I think when any of these attacks happen, it strengthens not just those who are doing the attacks. It also strengthens the narratives of those whose putrid hatred is equally based on this. So in some ways, there is this conspiracy between the extremes, that is just taking the middle and squeezing it, not just between a rock and a hard place, but a rock and a rock and a rock and another hard place. Yeah. And if you are a Muslim, but you don't have to be a Muslim, if you're anyone, you feel squeezed by that. On Theresa May, very, very briefly. Now, recall that when Sadiq Khan was elected, his being a Muslim was not inconsequential. It was a very major part of that narrative in very ugly ways from Theresa May's party itself. Mm-hmm. And she is facing an election. So in many ways, I think there is a putrid politics. There is the reality of terror, not just in the name of Islam, but terror on trains in Portland, terror in marketplaces, mm-hmm. and all of that is conspiring to really bring down. The one thing she's right is the values that societies have been built on for the last 50 years are under threat.
Well, then it's up to people of good faith and reason to speak out as much as possible. Adil Najam, founding dean of the Pardee School of Global Affairs at Boston University, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.